We do a Brian Costello right now. The Jets Report with Brian is sponsored by Winners Brothers, Long Island's number one choice for waste removal and recycling services, by CSEA Local 830. We work for you, by Security Dodge, Chrysler Jeep Ram, Suffolk County's number one volume dealer, and by Digital Ally, a proud partner of MetLife Stadium. Capture truth. Brian Costello with Kim and Jerry. We're going to start screaming at you right now to make you feel comfortable, like it's Joe and Evan. The Jets suck, Brian. What do you got?
There you go, Jerry. You're ready for the midday show.
How you doing?
What's up, Cos? How was your Christmas?
It was good. Merry Christmas to both of you. I hope it was good for you too.
Thank you. What's new? What's going on in your little area of the world?
I have squirrels in my attic. That's
what?
Oh, that's fun.
Wait, in your attic?
Yes, in my attic.
Multiple?
A guy here right now. Well, it's been over the last week, they've removed three.
What the heck is going on?
And now they think they're all out, so they're going to patch up the hole that they found, and we're going to hopefully be squirrel free for 2020.
They are loud, right?
They're loud, yes, and they're chewing through my wires in my house.
Oh, that's not good.
It's a lot of fun. Homeownership is as good as it gets.
It's so overrated, it's ridiculous.
When did this start? Like, when did you first either hear them or, well, I guess, hear them?
A couple of weeks ago.
Oh,
I waited about a week before I called someone, hoping it was my imagination.
Right.
Then I called someone, and they came in, and they set up traps. They trapped three of them, and now they're patching up the hole, and hopefully, and then I'll get the bill, and it'll be a lot of fun.
You will get the bill. And they do have to trap them. Like, they do have to, like, treat the squirrel properly.
Yeah, even though they're awful rodents.
They are.
Who cause nothing but trouble.
I would agree with you.
They did not get into your house, correct?
No, they did not get in the house, just the attic.
So when I was, I think, 11 or 12, a squirrel got into our house.
Really?
Oh, really.
Through the attic?
How they got in, I don't know.
Okay.
All I remember was my mother grabbing me and my brother and my sister saying, "We got to get out of here.
Yeah, well,
there's a squirrel running through
smart.
The house.
She's smart, yes.
And then watching my father with a baseball bat in one hand and a tennis racket in the other chase after this thing.
How'd that go?
Not well.
Not well not for the squirrel well. Or not well for dad?
Either.
Oh.
They ended up getting the squirrel out the upstairs bedroom window.
It left
it
that
finally,
way?
Yes, after 3 hours of running around after it.
Yeah.
Was there a screen?
There was a screen. They opened it.
Oh, they opened the screen. Yeah. Okay.
They told me to stay back when they opened the attic because it could jump out. You know, a squirrel could jump out.
That's
and then
awesome.
the one guy that was here said, you know, don't get alarmed if I scream.
Oh, my God.
But he's the professional.
Yes. And he goes, you never get used to these things jumping at you.
That's awesome. Yeah. They can have rabies.
Yes, and they're very fast. Very fast.
They could absolutely have rabies and bite you.
Yeah, pretty much.
I did. I think it was a turnoff special, and I'm not complaining. I had like a five-hour show in like February.
That's a long show.
It was a long show. And we did a solid 2+, I think. On squirrels.
Why?
Yeah, I remember that.
Because thank you, Cos. It's like the most memorable thing I've ever done, which says a lot about me, I know. But I mean, a squirrel story is right up my alley.
Very
well,
cool.
Good luck with the rest of it, Cos, including
the
invoice.
Any squirrels in Florham Park these days?
Not that I've seen.
We saw a fox there. Do you remember the fox last
there.
Season?
Yeah. The fox was there last season, yeah.
It was in and out of the dumpster. That could have had rabies.
It could have.
Yes.
That could have killed us.
Yep.
conceivably. It did.
Yeah, they were. I remember they were tracking that one day. I don't know what ever happened to the fox, but I haven't seen that in a long time.
Yeah, it hasn't been seen since, but we won't draw any conclusions there.
So let me ask you, so where do you stand, as we get away from animal talk for a moment?
Yeah, of course.
Where do you stand on Adam Gase? I know that Joe does not like him because I listen to you guys often.
Yeah, you get that impression.
Are you?
I know.
And you were good with him the other day,
yes.
I thought, when Joe was talking about the play calling at the end, and you're like, yeah, but if they don't do this, then you're killing him for that.
Right.
Are you a Gase fan, or are you just looking at the way they've played and you kind of back with what they've done?
Here's the problem for me, Jerry, is the way this has been set up this season, basically, I feel like, is you either have to say you fire Adam Gase or you're a Gase fan. Right. Like, there's no in between. And I don't think I'm a Gase fan, but my thing is, like, I've seen enough where I don't think he should be fired. Like, sometimes this takes time. You know, you don't turn around a team in one season. They had a bad roster coming into the year. Like, you know, the thing that kills me about Joe and others is they kill the drafts for the last 10 years, rightfully so, right? They haven't drafted well. But then it's like, the coach needs to be getting more out of these players. Well, like, no, there's not a lot of good players on this team. Hmm. So you start there, and then you add the injuries in. They're up to, like, I think they played 72 players this year. If you go through the defense and say, like, who you thought was going to start this year and who has actually played all 15 games, I think Marcus May is probably one, Steve McClendon's another. I don't know if you can come up with anyone else. Hmm. They've all been hurt at some point or another, including Jamal Adams.
Right.
So, to me, it's like they've won 6 games. I don't think he deserves coach of the year or anything like that, but I don't think I've seen enough where I'm like, you know, he's done. He should be done after 1 year. Or well, at 1-7, people were saying he should be fired in the middle of the season, which I thought was completely ridiculous. Yeah, I've seen enough. I want to see a little bit more from him next year, and does that make me a Gase fan? Like, I don't know, but like, I'm just, to me, there's no middle ground with this guy. It's a strange thing I've seen this year.
And it's rampant. I mean, we do see it in other spots. Certainly Adam Gase, one of the bigger lightning rods in our market at this point. Kaz, I'm curious about two ideas that kind of go together. You mentioned 1-7. I don't have evidence in front of me, but it's hard for me to remember many teams that have really crawled out of that to the extent that the Jets have. And it also, some of this corresponded to Christopher Johnson telling the players Gase was going to be back. And I have to believe, even though I at least have not talked to Chris Johnson since then, I have to believe that he feels at least as good about that decision now and probably better. So where are you on those two ideas that are kind of related?
Yeah, I mean, I think he definitely feels, he has to feel good about it, because it was, you know, they were 1-7 when he went to the team, and then he told us a week later,
right,
he made it public after they beat the Giants. But that was a pretty bold time to say, I'm back in this coach, he's coming back next year. So, it was a very strong move by him, and I think it did take some of the pressure off the players. Now, like, let's not be naive, the schedule eased up.
Yes.
They did get the Giants and the Redskins, the Bengals, who they lost to. They got some teams that weren't that good after that. They started winning some games. But this is a team, like I said, lost to the Bengals, did lose to the Dolphins. So they were capable of losing to anybody. But he has to feel good about that. I think Gase and the Jets have to feel good about pulling themselves out of, what you said, 1-7. When they were 1-6, before they lost to the Dolphins, I talked to someone who said, this team is like 2 weeks away from just splintering. Like, he's going to lose that locker room. Someone on the outside from another team is like, they can't survive this. He's going to lose the locker room. He didn't. And they didn't splinter. And that's a credit to him and the leadership in the locker room. And they managed to, you know, like I said, 6-9, you're not throwing a parade for them. But when they were 1-7, it was like, oh my gosh, is this team going to go 1-15? Like, that was a legitimate question that I asked, other people asked. And, you know, they have managed to win some good games. The Raiders game win was a good win. I thought this week against the Steelers was a good win. And they played well. It's crazy to say this because they lost by 3 touchdowns, but I thought they played well in Baltimore against the best team in football. So
I did too. I thought that game, I didn't think the score indicated the way that game kind of went. That. They also made decisions based on their season. And you're right. And I think people thought 1-15, specifically, I thought, because when you lost to Jacksonville and Miami, I thought those two were people like, well, who are they going to beat? One other one, and I'll check this. I think the Redskins 1 year with Marty Schottenheimer were 1-6 or 1-7, finished 8-8. I thought he did a great coaching job. And then I think they fired him for Steve Spurrier.
He only had one season, I think, right, in Washington?
Yeah.
So,
I think that was the way that year went. I think. I'll check on that. With Darnold this year, obviously the 3-game hiccup, had the progress he's made, do you think, now another year?
Yeah, I think he's made progress. I don't think he made that leap, that U2 leap we talked about in August, that, you know, you wanted to see him. Could he jump like Jared Goff jumped? You know, that's kind of the standard now, and it didn't happen. But he's made progress, and I think if you look, if you take the second half of the season, even the Miami game when they lost in Miami, he had that horrible interception at the goal line. But other than that, he played pretty well in that game. So if you take that, like, from that game on, I think he's played pretty well. I think he has 4 interceptions in that stretch, but he had 8 in the first 4 games. So it was, you know, I think he definitely improved. He still does some things with footwork that make you, like, you know, question him. And it's a funny thing because Sam can make throws when his feet aren't right. And sometimes that's, like, a great thing. Like, against Dallas, he did that a ton, and we were all like, wow. Like, he makes all these throws. But then he falls into, like, bad habits where he's trying to do that and it doesn't work. So I don't know, like, what they do there if they try to get beat that out of him. Because it's sort of like the magic of Sam Darnold, too, is when he makes some of these throws off of a bad platform. But I think it's also hurting him at times. So they still have some work to do. And you want to see consistency because there's, like, one or two plays a game where you're like, wow. Like, he makes a throw that you're like, okay, this guy has it. Like, most people can't make that throw. But then there's one or two plays a game where he throws it up in the air. It's either intercepted or near interception, and you scratch your head. So I just think in 2020, you got to see him be more consistent with the ball. And I think, you know, he gets another year in the system, and that will help.
Kaz, when you look in terms of the Jets and their future, how much of a priority do you think the offensive line will be for the organization and Joe Douglas in particular this offseason? I have to believe pretty high.
Yeah, I think it's number one in terms of bringing guys to the outside. I think they have some internal things like Jamal. Whether you know, I'm pretty certain Jamal's going to be looking for a new contract. You know, so I think that'll be a priority. Robbie Anderson, obviously, is going to be a priority. But from the outside, they've got to upgrade this line. And I think all they need to do is look at this week's opponent, Buffalo, and to see how it works. Buffalo had four new starters on the offensive line this year. That's been huge for Josh Allen. That's been huge for them. The Jets went a different direction last year. They only brought in Osemele in the offseason.
Right.
And obviously that didn't work out.
And then Khalil, which ultimately
Khalil in August, which that didn't work out. So, you know, Joe Douglas has to find, you know, I think almost four new starters, three or four new starters. So I think that's going to be free agency. I think that's going to be the draft. I do think that's going to be their number one priority this offseason.
Brian Costello with us talking Jets. Are we, just because you mentioned him with the contract, are we past all the stuff with Jamal Adams and management? Is that finally in the rearview mirror? Are we moving forward now?
You know, I think it's going to come up again.
You do? Really?
Yeah, because I think he's getting $3.5 million next year. He's not a $3.5 million player. He's worth a lot more than that. When their safety's out there getting $14 million a year, I think Jamal's going to be looking to be the highest paid safety, probably. You know, and he hasn't said this, his agent has said this, I'm just speculating, but just logically, if I'm Jamal Adams and I'm his agent, that's what I'm looking for. And so I think, you know, going forward, they're going to have to consider whether they're going to pay him and then decide whether they're going to, you know, shop him again and see what they can get. So I think this will pop up again in the offseason.
But I guess that's my more so than the money in the contract. I guess I'm more asking the relationship. Has that been repaired?
The relationship's fine right now. Yeah, the relationship's fine. And, you know, I think Jamal was hurt initially. And look, you know from watching the guy how emotional Jamal Adams is, right? Like, all you have to do is watch him play football. He's an emotional guy. He's 24 years old. I think he was hurt that they were trying to trade him or talking about trading him. I think he's over that. Like, I actually saw him and Gase at a practice, you know, last week, I think, and they were on the field together for a while talking. They were together on the field in Baltimore when Jamal wasn't playing, talking for a while. So I think they're fine. You know, I don't know about Joe Douglas. I haven't seen them interact, but you know, it seemed like they squashed that pretty quick. You know, the week after that whole story, and he said all the right things since then. So I think they're okay. But I do think the topic of Jamal is going to be a hot one this offseason.
I think it's a franchise changing decision, though, cause one way or another, because of the money that safeties are now commanding and that he will command, the player he is, the emotion he brings. And, you know, if you want to watch a secondary that doesn't have an emotional player doing a whole lot for them, you know, look at the Giants secondary. I mean, you don't want that secondary. You have a strength of that team. And he is largely the reason why. And I understand Marcus May is a very good safety as well. So I do think that this is a very interesting decision and pivotal decision for the Jets. I know that's not breaking news the way I just said it, but there's a lot to it, I guess, is my point.
There is. And I think, you know, safety position is not a position traditionally you invest a lot of money in, but he's a special player.
Yep.
And I think, you know, I mentioned the drafts before. If you go through the Jets drafts, it's so grim. There's so many Clifton Copels and Calvin Pryors and Dino Lynch, you know, through the years. They got it right. They got a guy, they got it right.
Yep.
And I think you pay those guys. I think that's what good organizations do. So I think you got to pay them. and keep him here. And they look like a different team when he's on the field.
Agreed.
And, you know, like you talked about the emotion. He gives them such an emotional lift. And you don't even have to look at his number when he makes a tackle. Like, right. I've said this before. Like, the way he hits guys is just different. And it's like, oh, that's Jamal. You know, and so I think they're going to have to pay him. And I think the way he's played since the trade deadline kind of made the decision for them. He's been on fire. And he's just been such an emotional leader for this team. So I do think they end up keeping him.
Last thing for me, Brian Costello, was that you with the podcast with Brandon Marshall?
It was, yes.
Good job, guys.
How about the comments? And we played them the other day from your podcast.
The
stuff about Revis, and I'm blanking out on who the other one was, but just the comments. How they played or didn't play the season defensively, but specifically that game in Buffalo. Were you blown away that Marshall was just so outward and critical of that?
Yeah, I was surprised he wasn't. I mean, I knew there was tension there. Obviously, we knew in 2016 it came out. There was a lot of tension there. But I was surprised Brandon went there in 2019. I'm shocked that he called him out like that. But, you know, it just shows you, you know, people wonder, like, what happened from, you know, 2015-10-6 to 2016-5-11. Like, that team just completely came apart in 2016. And there was a lot of guys who didn't like each other, including Brandon and Revis, and Brandon and Sheldon Richardson all had conflicts that year. But, you know, it's just amazing to me that 2015 game is the last really truly meaningful game this franchise has played, that game in Buffalo, where, like, the playoffs were on the line. And, you know, it still haunts them that they didn't make the playoffs in that game. It would have been a lot different. So I think, you know, that's why I asked the question going into this week. But clearly Brandon was not a Revis fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, Kaz, you make a good point about Buffalo. Buffalo's done an awful lot of things right in terms of building that team, that locker room. I'm there a good deal these days, and I'll be there next week. And I can speak to it because I see it with my own eyes. The quarterbacks are not dissimilar. They have dissimilar backgrounds in Josh Allen and Sam, but they're not that unlike each other. That they do have a lot of similarities. That they talk, I think, still just about every day. I don't know if they'd both admit that, but I think they still talk very, very often. They're very close. There's a lot of parallels there. I wonder if at some point, and for Gase, it might not be immediately on Sunday, and I would understand that he's coaching the game, but particularly for Joe Douglas, I wonder if he can look at that team built by Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott and see the idea. It's taken a little while, but they've made some really astute free agency decisions, including at safety, where the Jets likely don't have to make a free agency decision. But they've done some really good things in Buffalo that would not be impossible for a smart Jets organization to replicate.
Yeah, you know, and their strength is their defense, which I think the Jets' strength is going to be their defense going forward. And then the line, you know, adding John Brown was great for them.
Yes.
And the decision that really stands out to me, like I recall a while ago about Buffalo and comparing them to the Jets, the decision that, like, it was amazing was when they went to the playoffs in 2017, and then they recognized, like, this is not really a playoff team.
Yes.
And they moved, like, they got rid of Tyrod Taylor, they draft Josh Allen, and they basically said, we're going to take our, you know, we're going to rebuild this. You know, that's gutsy. You know, because you have a playoff team, the temptation is, let's keep this team together. So they made a lot of good decisions. I think the other thing is, Kim, is, you know, McDermott and Bean are aligned. And I think, you know, and Jets fans don't want to hear anything good about Gase, but I do think Gase and Douglas are now aligned.
Good point.
And, you know, Gase obviously brought Douglas in here, you could say. The Jets haven't had that, you know. I mean, Todd Bowles and Mike McCagney were not at each other's throats. They basically just didn't talk to each other.
Right.
And, you know, before that, Rex Ryan and John Idzik were at each other.
I was just going to say, that was the throat.
So it's like, you have to go back to 2012 when Rex and Mike Tannenbaum were together, to have a coach and GM that have the same vision, that are you know, together, that it's not a arranged marriage. You know, these guys want to be together. Does that translate into wins? I don't know. But I think it helps.
Right.
So, you know, they've got to find good players. They still have to do that. But I think it helps that these two, I think, share a vision, sort of like what the guys in Buffalo do.
And I think, and you went big picture there, which was perfect, Kaz, but I actually thought as you were kind of winding up that you were going to go Cole Beasley, because the Jets have already done that in Jamison Crowder. And I know sounds simplistic, and I know that that is individual as opposed to big picture, but that is the kind of receiver that if you've got a young quarterback, you've got to give him that guy. That, I did think, was a very good move. Jamison Crowder, you've written about him. He has an inspiring personal story as well, which I understand that part doesn't matter as much on Sundays, but they've already taken at least one of those steps that I think they absolutely have to. And when they get Chris Herndon back, they will take another of those steps that you have to have. You have to give the young quarterback in particular in this league that kind of target.
Yeah, no, and Herndon's somebody we don't talk about.
Right.
You know, it's like he's like a forgotten man. Yep. But he only played 18 snaps, I think, or something like that.
It's amazing.
So, you know, that's been a big factor because we thought he'd have a good year. Quincy Enunwa, too. You know, barely played one game.
Yep.
We thought he'd be a factor. So
he may not be back.
He may not be back.
Quincy might have, you know, burned that bridge.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know how Quincy's neck is.
Okay.
He did say in an event a little while ago he wants to still play, but I don't know how his health is. And then B, you know, he had the incident where he tweeted about his fine and he's not a fan of Adam Gase. So yeah, he might not be back. But you know, I think they have missed him this year.
Mm-hmm.
And Herndon, like you mentioned, Crowder has 70 catches, his career high. He's been a great signing for them. But yeah, they definitely need to add some pieces around Sam.
Brian, appreciate a few minutes.
All right, guys.
We'll get to Le'Veon Bell next time, Kaz.
That's right. You didn't even touch him.
Brian Costello, thanks very much. Kazi. Enjoy the weekend. All right, there he is, Brian Costello, The Post, a little Jet Report. Good stuff there.
We have good media people in this town.
Yeah,
you hear them all the time on The Fan, and it's a luxury to be able to go to people who know what's going on and can communicate it so well.
Plus, we can learn about squirrels.
Love it.